My name's Dr. David Malbranch. I'm an associate professor with Morehouse School of Medicine. Today I'm going to be talking about my session at the National HIV Prevention Conference that was entitled We Are Family, Helping Patients Navigate the HIV Care Continuum. My session was really focused on more of the humane aspects of the HIV care continuum and treatment cascade, and kind of a reminder that in this setting of all the science that we have and the advancements of science with treatment and prevention, to remember some kind of the human qualities of how we administer care as physicians. We live in a time where there's a lot of science that's really helped advance the how we treat HIV, and especially when we look at the medications available. You know, back 20 years ago with the advent of triple drug antiretroviral therapy, it was three medications. Some of them would have to be taken 2 to 3 times a day. Some of the regimens people were on were up to 20 pills. Some of them had to be taken with food, without food. And the way the science has advanced is that right now we have all these options, I think close to 10 or 11 now, where if someone is diagnosed with HIV today, they can start on a one pill once a day regimen that has the three medications in them, can be taken with or without food, and have a lot less side effects than the previous versions of some of these medications did in the past. Plus, you know, from the estimates, and Dr. Anthony Fauci had given a plenary speech before mine, he talked about if someone is diagnosed with HIV today and they start on the medications and continue on with them, they're expected to have a life expectancy of 53 years after diagnosis, which is close to are comparable to someone who is HIV negative. So there's a lot of great science that's kind of floating around for us right now. Where I think we have a lot of the knowledge gaps and the research gaps is when we look at the HIV treatment care continuum, we see HIV testing, linkage to care, people being engaged in care on antiretroviral therapy, and then finally viral suppression. So those are the five tenets we typically look at. From a lot of the literature that examines patients navigating this cascade, what we've been seeing is a lot of people dropping off after they're linked to care. So there's something happening within medical spaces, systems, and during the patient's interactions with medical staff and personnel that is influencing their drop off. And so is influencing people not following up, not remaining engaged, which means they're not going to remain on their antiretroviral therapy and ultimately will not be viral suppressed. And right now, the key to curbing this epidemic or the key to curing this epidemic until we find a functional cure, such as a vaccine or another medication, is to keep people virally suppressed. People living with HIV need to be virally suppressed because the studies are all resoundingly clear that when someone living with HIV is virally suppressed, and they're doing well on their medications, their risk of transmitting HIV to their sexual partners is essentially zero. And so the goal is to get it to that point. And so what's happening, what I see in the research a lot of times, is we end up blaming the victim. So we look at the patient. So we say, you know, we notice that the patient found out that they were positive, got their first appointment in the clinic, and then what happened after that, they dropped out or they were sporadic with their follow-up and they weren't virally suppressed. We don't know if they're taking their meds or not, so on and so forth. And what medical and public health research has typically done is kind of turn back and blame the patient, say, well, what's wrong with the patient? And so we look at some things logically like poverty, insurance, access to care, transportation, life circumstances, so on and so forth. But what we have been also finding is that even when these things are stable, these social conditions are stable, people are still dropping out of care, which to me begs the question, who is administering the medication and how are the processes and the experiences that our patients are going through in these systems and how is that influencing whether they stay engaged in care? And so the crux of my plenary was basically why I titled it We Are Family is I told a narrative from a story I published probably about 10 years ago in the Journal of General Internal Medicine. It was entitled Becoming a Father, about a young patient that I had seen about 10 years ago while I was working in the Atlanta clinic. And he had end-stage AIDS, his T-cell count was only 30, and he kept complaining that he had diarrhea, but all his labs were normal and everything about him looked fine. And so he kept going to the emergency rooms and different things. And I kept wondering, you know, kind of what was going on with him? Why is he doing this? What's happening? Why does he keep insisting that he's having a problem when objectively we couldn't find anything? And the gist of the story is that I had to kind of go beyond being a provider and thinking of myself just as a medical doctor and say, well, okay, what would I do if this person was my younger brother, or if he were my son, or if he were my nephew? And he was Black, I'm Black as well. So I said to myself, well, I would want him to be admitted to my service in the hospital, or I would advocate for him as much as I possibly could. And so I admitted him to my inpatient service, and we did a whole bunch of stool cultures, and we did a whole bunch of, you know, other tests. And within a day, we were able to determine what was making him sick, got him treatment, and he did a lot better because of that. And so my charge to the audience was, we all know that we have implicit biases as human beings and as providers, as medical staff. We have this great science, and we're trying to get people to come in to see us. Why some patients don't engage in care is because of the nature of the personal experience that they go through when they journey through our medical facilities and our medical processes. So whether it be challenging paperwork, a receptionist who gives them a bad attitude, a nurse who is abrupt and rude with them, a doctor who is abrupt and rude with them, a physician assistant, a phlebotomist who says an off-color comment that offends them, long waiting times, impersonal environments, all these things can actually contribute to somebody not wanting to come back. And so if we are really wanting to enhance somebody's experience, we do realize that the medical system can be very challenging and some of these things are out of our control. But the way we can actually make it a better experience for our patients and help them to stay engaged and want to continue to come back with us and see us and want to be on their medications is show them that we really care. And so getting back to practicing the art of medicine instead of just the science of medicine, because all that science is going to be great. Injectable medications, single tablet regimens, vaccines that may be coming out, pre-exposure prophylaxis, either by pill or gel or injection, all these things are great, but they have to be prescribed by medical personnel, whether they be physician assistants, nurse practitioners, or physicians themselves. And so that human interaction is something we can't forget. And we can't just keep blaming patients and their either social conditions or individual level factors for why they don't engage with us in care. And I didn't mention this in the plenary, but one of the things that I always tout as an analogy here is because medicine has become a business, right? So medicine is something where, you know, people are concerned about numbers, they're concerned about customer service, they're concerned about, you know, outcomes and RVUs and all that stuff. So if they're concerned about all this stuff and customer service, then look at it as if it was a restaurant business. And if someone came in and ate a meal at your restaurant and they never came back, would you blame your patron or your client or your customer and say, well, what was wrong with you that you didn't come back to our restaurant? You ate here once and you didn't come back. No, you'd be asking yourself questions. Did they have to wait long for their food? Were they greeted by the host warmly? Did their server treat them rudely or was impatient with them? Did the food taste like crap? All these other things you have to ask yourself. And if we're not asking ourselves those questions as the purveyors of this wonderful science in medical facilities, then we're doing our customers, our patients, a grave disservice. And so my charge again to the audience and to a lot of the not only infectious disease specialists, but other primary care providers, HIV treatment providers, sexual health providers, is to keep practicing the art of medicine, because the science of medicine, I have no worries about it all. We're advancing, money is there, the scientists are doing their thing. I eventually am optimistic that there's going to be a cure at some point for HIV. But if we don't actually practice the art of medicine anymore, we're going to lose those patients who could benefit from the science. So my goal in reaching out to people and giving this plenary session was to look across the aisle at that patient that's sitting across from you, whether you're the receptionist, the nurse practitioner, the PA, the phlebotomist, the checkout person, the physician, whoever you are. And when it gets challenging from either, you know, you're too busy, you're burnt out, the patient seems to be problematic, you're not getting along. Imagine if that was your mother. Imagine if that was your son, your daughter, your nephew, your uncle, your father, your grandfather, your grandmother, whoever it is in your family. Imagine that that was them, and picture how you would advocate for your family in that certain situation, in that same situation, and then treat them accordingly. Because I think one of the things we've lost is how to empathize with our patients and see ourselves in them, walk in their shoes or imagine them being a member of our family. A lot of people will say things like, meet people where they are. And one of the things I challenged the audience in this plenary was, go further than meeting them where they are. Imagine being who they are, and that will help you provide better care overall. My key takeaway for the providers out there is to work just as hard as practicing the art of medicine as you do practicing the science of medicine. That's my take home. Thank you for listening to the podcast today. And if you need any more information, click on the links below.